This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com. Hello and welcome to Save Your Prediction of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum, and today we have an episode for you about the cloudberry.
Yes, which, fun name. Also, yeah. Never heard of them. Until this.
Okay, all right. Well, there's a good reason for that, and it's that they're really hard to find outside of areas where they're grown, which is kind of why we wanted to talk about them.
Yeah, they're really cool. They're really cool. And it's neat to me that there's just small pockets where you can find them, and it's sort of like luck when you do a lot of times. Like, ooh,
yeah,
cloudberry.
Yeah, and it's a really big deal in like all of the cultures that have them, because mm-hmm. they're usually only available for like 3 weeks a year.
Yeah.
You have to go hiking into a swamp to find them.
I mean, doesn't that sound fun? Isn't that cool? I think it's cool.
I have not. I've never had them myself. So I'm like, okay, we're going to have to go someplace during that like 3 week window in the summer.
I'm into it.
And hike into a bog and get some cloudberries.
And then I feel like the horror movie idea writes itself. I don't even need to tell you what it is. But I do need to just, it's in my contract that I have to make a horror movie reference, idea once per episode, at least once per episode.
Yeah, no, this is pretty much how the ritual started. So, yeah, I think.
Yes, well, it'll be a grand old time. So I look forward to it, Lauren. And this one is very, like, listener request heavy. Like, if you've had them, if you've gone hiking into that bog, if you got recipes with them, please, please let us know.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes. But I guess this brings us to our question.
Uh-huh.
Cloudberries. What are they?
Well, a cloudberry is a type of fruit that looks sort of like a raspberry, but its little sections are less little. It has like fewer larger sections per berry. They're ruby pink while they're growing and turn golden to sunset orange when they're ripe. They're pretty delicate. And I've heard them described in flavor as like sharply tart and a little bit winey and very sweet, sort of like pineapple-y or apple-y and a little bit floral. Again, I haven't had them, so I'm going off of what the internet has told me, but y'all, like, they look like Nintendo designed berry. Like, this looks like a thing that you're supposed to feed to Pokemon.
Oh, I could see that. I've been playing a lot of Mario Party lately, and there's a berry based video game, mini game within the video game, excuse me. but yeah, they're very, cloudberries are very pretty, very beautiful. They kind of look surreal or like ethereal, out of this world.
Yeah. I'm so curious about them. Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. I at the very least need to get my hands on some jam made from them. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Botanical name, Rubus camomorus. The cloudberry is in the Rosaica or rose family, same genus as raspberries and strawberries. Cloudberries grow wild in like subarctic peat bogs. They are not domesticated, but rather foraged wild. The plants are short and herbaceous. That means just like soft, not woody, with broad leaves that remind me a lot of strawberry leaves. They have little underground rhizomes like strawberries and mostly propagate through shoots instead of via seeds. They flower with small white blooms in the spring and, if pollinated, will fruit in the summer. And those fruits are collections, like amalgamations, like little Voltrons of individually pollinated fruits. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They are known by different names in the areas where they're grown, sometimes called the moss berry in Alaska or the bake apple in Canada. We apparently get the English cloudberry from its nomenclature in Ireland and Scotland, which took the old English word clud, meaning hill, and appended berry to it. Cloudberry. Cloudberry. Yeah.
I like cloudberry too. All of those names are pretty fun, to be honest.
Right? Mm-hmm. Oh, I was trying to find the etymology of bake apple, and it's got one of those stories that I think is never true. Mm-hmm. That's like a misunderstanding between languages story of mm-hmm. like a group of French Canadians and a group of English speakers hanging out, both of them being like, "What's this berry?" and asking each other and neither knowing, but mm-hmm. the English speakers mishearing the French speakers saying, bake a bell.
Oh,
like, what's this berry called? Mm-hmm. And going, oh, bake apple. That's what it's called. I don't think it's true.
I don't think it's true either, but it's also fun, you know?
It is, right. in different places, knowledge about where you can find patches of these growing are like guarded family secrets passed down generation to generation. And by all accounts, yep, they are a pain in the rear to find and forage. I mean, like, you're in a swamp. There's usually only one berry per plant.
Wow.
And so, you know, and they do grow in like clusters, but.
Wow, that feels like an ultimate quest in a video game or something. Very rare berry, and when you find it, it's you're so excited, but then the swamp bog swallows you up. You got to be very careful foraging it, you know, that kind of situation.
I love it. Mm-hmm. They are eaten fresh, but also made into jams and syrups and alcoholic beverages, or cooked down and baked into or heaped onto all kinds of sweet and savory dishes. They're apparently a favorite, either fresh or preserved, with this squeaky roasted cheese from Finland. I'm probably going to be mispronouncing this. I'm sorry. Leipäjuusto? Leipäjuusta? Something like that. I did look it up.
She did. It was a whole roller coaster of emotions trying to get this correct. But as always, listeners, you can let us know.
It looks like a really good cheese dish.
It sounds good.
Like roasted cheese curds. Yes, I want that. Please and thank you.
Absolutely.
Anyway, okay. Back to the cloudberry. It is really hard to get them fresh outside of where they're grown, which is right. Like Canada, Alaska, the northern parts of the British Isles, the northern parts of Scandinavia, and the northern parts of Russia. In most of the United States, below like New Hampshire, your best bet is going to be in jam format. Like IKEA carries it in their stores sometimes. The seeds are also pressed for their oil, which is used in the cosmetic industry.
So a lot of uses. Okay. Well, what about the nutrition?
They're pretty good for you when they're fresh. Lots of micronutrients, including a good punch of vitamin C, which people have enjoyed them for a very long time. But more about that in the history section. Of course, when you know, mix them with a bunch of lard, for example, and sugar, it's going to be a little bit less healthy, but still delicious.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We do have some numbers for you.
We do. Because these are not industrially produced, it is a little bit hard to track down, like, production numbers for them. But taking Finland as an example, if you look at the wild berries of Finland, like including cloudberries and bilberries and lingonberries, it's thought that about like 2.2 billion pounds of wild berries grow every year. But only a slim fraction of that actually gets picked, like 5 to 10%. Overall, it's a little higher for cloudberries because they are so prized, like about 20%, but still, like, such a small amount.
Yeah.
Such a small amount. Mm-hmm. Again, from Finland, that amounts to some like 25 to 30 million kilos a year, which is like 55 to 66 million pounds. The plant is featured on Finland's 2-euro coin. There are festivals around the world celebrating those few weeks that you can get them fresh. One of them I read about from Finland has what was described as a traditional rubber boot throwing contest.
Oh, yes. The traditional rubber boot throwing contest.
I need to know more about this. Someone please write in, please.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And author Mimi Sheraton included cloudberries in her 2015 book, 1,000 Foods to Eat Before You Die.
Well, there you go. Now we have to. I think we've collected enough evidence to present a plan to our boss. We've got to figure out, we got to get to the bottom of this boot throwing contest.
We do.
We've got to go marching into a swamp at a certain time per year. And this book tells us we have to eat them before we die. So, that's three solid points.
Who is anyone to argue with that level of logic?
I mean, I think it's airtight. I think this is airtight. And then you just start turning it around. You're like, you want me to go through life without trying cloudberries, you monster? See? I think we got this.
I think we do. I'm going to start drafting that proposal in my head.
Okay.
But in the meanwhile, we are going to get into the history in a minute here. But first, we're going to take a quick break for a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
So, the cloudberry's history is a bit murky, but it most likely originated in Scandinavia, Russia, Canada, and perhaps the northern U.S. And throughout history, they have long been viewed as medicinal, yes.
Yeah, medicinal in addition to tasty. Probably Aboriginal peoples were eating these going way, way back. And Vikings may have brought them on voyages to help combat scurvy. Preserved in barrels, I believe in oils.
Yes. And here's something from 1596 about the Norwegian use of cloudberries.
This is from a German physician who had traveled to Norway to investigate a possible treatment for scurvy. Scurvy was a really big deal at this time as globalization and colonization were occurring around the world. There was a lot of people traveling via ship, not getting fresh fruits and vegetables, and scurvy is terrible, like really bad. So people were really paying attention to this problem.
It was a matter of big concern and a lot of inquiry, and that's why we talk about it very frequently in these episodes. So yes,
it was
quite a big deal. And this is quite a long quote, but come along the journey. I promise it is worth the journey.
Okay.
They cooked the berries in an earthen or metal pot to a soft consistency without adding other liquid because the juices are rich and soft and they do not want them to be diluted with other liquids. There are many who mix this jam with more tasty things such as honey wine from the island Finn, in which these northern populations take the highest enjoyment. They then preserve this jam very carefully in appropriate vases, covered with melted healthy butter so that it is not spoiled by the air of the environment. And this jam is known and most well proven as a remedy for them against scurvy. And you would not easily believe the miracles these people in Norway make with this one medicine every day. Indeed, they absolutely swear that nothing has been celebrated with as many praises until now, not even either the scurvy grass or the common chickweed or watercress and other plants of this type, which the Germans brag of and use for themselves. And indeed, one has to praise the unique goodness of God because he wanted to provide this wonderful plant for remote Norway, a country that extends longer into the north and which has a lot of terrible diseases because of the roughness of the weather and soil. And God wanted indeed to cure by indigenous remedies the harsh, decaying, melancholic diseases which are very prominent there. So that quote kind of takes a turn, but clearly very praised. The cloudberry was very praised and seems to have been quite effective.
Yeah.
For scurvy. Yeah.
And Europeans who came to North America observed the plant here as well. Specifically, one Andrew Graham, who was a naturalist working for the Hudson Bay Company in Canada in the mid-1700s.
Yes, he wrote about the cloudberry. Cloudberry plants grow in a dry, mossy soil, is of the form of a strawberry, but near thrice as large and of a deep yellow. It seems glutinous when eaten raw, but is very agreeable when made into tarts and has much resemblance in taste to apples. The shrub which produces them is not thicker than coarse sewing twine. It runs for several yards on the ground before it penetrates through the moss and just emerges at its end to produce a white flower similar to the daisy, but much inferior in size. To this succeeds the fruit or berry. There is only one berry to a stalk. Well, I don't know. You got to take daisies down like that, but very agreeable when made into tarts is nice. It sounds lovely.
Yeah.
Quite agreeable, I must say. A doctoral thesis published in 1635 posited that cloudberries were very effective against scurvy. And then apparently cloudberries grow on one mountain slope in Ireland. Again, listeners, if you know about this, if you've witnessed this, please let us know.
Yeah.
So when they first popped up in the written record in that area in 1826, they were called plentiful and abundant. However, the next mention didn't take place until 1892, when two botanists discovered just these two small patches and wrote that the berries occurred sparingly. And in 1950, a prominent naturalist believed the cloudberry to be extinct in Ireland. However, this belief was disproved when some were found in 1958. As of 2003, only 19 shoots were recorded in that area. So it's this one slope of a mountain.
Wow.
And there's been a lot of research as to why they went from apparently a lot to just a little in what seems to be a fairly short amount of time. And it was very fascinating. It was sort of beyond the scope of my understanding. But basically, like, changes in the soil and then a new berry was introduced, I think, were sort of the big ones that they mentioned. The weather changed a bit. But yeah, there's like these two little patches that just still hold it on.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I'm rooting for him. That's not even
too.
A plant pun.
But now it is, Lauren. Now it is.
Oh, no.
According to a 1953 source called Edible Plants of the Arctic, the indigenous people of Alaska made a dessert of caribou tallow, seal oil, and cloudberries. Some sources suggest that people from that region have been making that for thousands of years, and that it was often made by women after the first catch of seal.
Huh. Yeah, this is a whole thing. You can look up recipes for it, including variations that use less like localized ingredients if you don't happen to have caribou tallow at home. It's called agutak. Yes. A-K-U-T-A-Q. Yeah. It's usually an animal fat plus sugar plus berries situation, sometimes blended with a texturizer like mashed potatoes or ground fish.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds really different and lovely. And I really need to try some.
Totally agree. Totally agree. We're racking up all the things we got to try in this one. Other sources indicate that indigenous peoples in this area use cloudberries for medicinal purposes as well. And several medicinal sources at this time in general recommended it for a wide array of, quote, feminine complaints like menstrual cramps, painful labor, and infertility. From the author of the work, The Wild Berry Book, Romance, Recipes, and Remedies, a substance in the leaves of red raspberries, variously called framamine, I hope so, fragrine or fragrine. I probably butchered all of those, but we're going to roll with it. Isolated in the 1940s, strengthens, relaxes, and tones the uterus, thus exonerating the old wives' advice that raspberry tea should be taken throughout pregnancy, labor, and postparturition. The leaves, according to modern analysis, are also high in magnesium, which is still in use to prevent miscarriage. So that's interesting. Hmm. Again, a lot of inquiry into the cloudberry.
Yeah.
And its potential medicinal benefits. Cloudberries were discovered in Minnesota in 1954, and several decades later, in 1984, it was named as an endangered species in that state.
In the early 2000s, international interest in cloudberries really picked up, including both export of cloudberry products and also import of cloudberry pickers into Scandinavian countries. Foreign berry pickers were responsible for up to 78% of wildberry sales in Finland as of 2011. Thousands of visas are issued every year, mostly to people from Thailand. Like, it's a serious enough business that the Thai government made an exception in 2020 to its travel shutdowns early on in the pandemic to allow workers to go to Scandinavia for berry picking. And there's been some controversy about, like, hiring and payment practices. Like, most workers are coming in for 2 to 3 months a year as salaried employees of Finnish companies that recruit them and help them get their visa, but that might not be, like, paying them appropriately or helping them secure adequate standards of living while they're in the country. Just for example, like, one of the tangles. In Finland, selling berries that you have foraged personally is tax-exempt income. But because these workers are salaried, they can be taxed. So, like, maybe the company is taking that profit. So,
right.
Stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there seem to be a lot of laws around Scandinavian countries kind of guaranteeing the right to forage these berries. Mm-hmm. Like, they're just considered such a public trust that it's like, yeah, no, go forage them.
Mm-hmm. Forage away.
In 2016, there was an animated short film made in Russia about a little girl who befriends the wolf that's scaring all the villagers, old scary wolf. She befriends him partially through sharing pancakes and cloudberries.
I mean, that's pretty solid strategy.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And speaking of animated films, okay, I don't know whether cloudberries are featured in the Frozen films. I have not watched them. I cannot speak to them. But the berries do appear in Frozen-related stories from Disney. There's apparently a cloudberry festival every year in wherever Frozen is set. Not Norway.
Not Norway.
Fictional Norway.
Fictional Norway, yes. Yeah. You know what I'm going to do immediately after this? I'm going to look up the menu for the Disney restaurant. That's based on Frozen, and see if there are cloudberries there.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that pretty much brings us up to today. In the future, some researchers are hoping to go ahead and domesticate the cloudberry, so that we can get larger yields of kind of sturdier fruit. Although one expert in the field told NPR's The Salt back in 2015 that might be, like, at least a couple decades off. They did not sound, like, immediately hopeful.
I'm of two minds about that, because I'm like, I would love to have more cloudberries or any cloudberries, but also it's kind of cool that it's kind of part of the allure that it's like, oh, you have to go forage them and see if you do find any.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, who knows?
Who knows? I guess decades from now, maybe we'll do a revisit.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, but then, you know, like, I don't know. Sometimes when you get, like I wouldn't want to get, like, a disappointing cloudberry, you know, when sometimes you get, like, a disappointing strawberry and you're like, oh, that's not.
My heart just clenched at the thought of that, Lauren. I don't.
Right?
Don't put that idea in my head. They're these beautiful things that is sounds cool enough to be in Frozen. Like, I don't need to be worried about them tasting just meh.
Yeah. Yeah. No, so sometimes, I mean, you know, in making produce sturdy enough to survive into wider marketplaces, you do lose some of that. I mean, obviously you're losing the ephemera of being in a bog, but...
Yes.
But yeah, no, I mean, there's always trade-offs.
That's true.
Genetically speaking. So, or there can be. But yeah, I'm curious. You know, I wish these researchers the best, and I'm excited to see what they come up with.
I am as well. And I know when I was doing my quick, like, make sure no news about cloudberries is broken today before we go in, uh-huh. I did see that Cloudberry drinks are becoming more common in the United States. Huh. So, I don't know. The interest, as you said, has gone up. The future of the Cloudberry, just as murky as its past. But very excited to try some. Very, very excited.
Absolutely.
Yes. And as we said, listeners, if you've tried some, if you've found some, if you have recipes with them, please let us know. But in the meantime,
listener mail.
Like a cloud.
Yeah.
Sorry, I was like, what would a cloud? What's the cloud sound? And I had a lot of different directions, but that's the way I went. So
yeah, no, I liked it.
All
yeah.
Right. Well, that's what matters, Lauren. Megan wrote, I just finished listening to the induction cooktop episode. I'm a physics professor, so when the listener mails mentioning induction started rolling in, I meant to email and offer my help explaining things if you needed it. But as you might be able to guess, I'm a little behind. So by the time I was drafting my email, the induction episode was in my queue already. So now this is almost an email to tell you that you didn't need any help at all.
Aww.
Your explanations were almost exactly how I teach my students about induction.
Oh, cool.
I also really liked the light bulb analogy to explain current and resistance. I don't normally include much on how those differ between different materials in my classes for the sake of time, but if I ever do it in the future, I'm definitely stealing the analogy. You also did a really great job describing ferromagnetism. I normally describe it as the atoms/molecules in a material all being tiny magnets, and in certain materials like iron, all the tiny magnets line up so that the whole thing becomes magnetic, which is due to the spin of the electrons, just like you said. If you haven't looked at demonstrations about induction, I definitely recommend them, especially the jumping rings. It's one of my favorites to do because it looks really cool and gives students a lot to discuss. It shows the whole connection of how changing electric fields create magnetic fields and changing magnetic fields create electric fields. So a little more than you talked about on the show. Here's a link to the video I show my students if I can't do it in class. I don't actually have much experience with induction cooking, though some of my friends who are also physicists really like it. So I've been considering getting a single burner to try it out.
Oh, that's, thank you.
I know,
that's
so nice. Thank you. It's a big concern for us.
Oh, it genuinely, really, very much so is.
Yes.
Accuracy in this infotainment podcast is something that we really aspire to. And again, this, you know, we're just like I was an English major. Like, this is not
right.
This I only have background in this because I have been reading about stuff for the past like 10 years as my job.
Right. So it's when we hear from people in the field that we are talking about.
Right.
It is lovely. And thank you very much. Also, this class sounds, it sounds so cool, right? The class?
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, heck. And I'm, yeah, I have not watched the video yet. I'm totally going to do that right after we stop recording. And please, if anything that I say ever works, feel free to steal it. It is yours to take.
Yours for the stealing. And also, I would say right now about 30 to 40% of all of our emails are about induction. So I love this. I love this so much. I think it sounds like you should try the single burner and report back. And also, thanks to everybody who wrote in about our question about magneto and Wolverine and ferromagnetism. Thank you. Also extremely important to us.
It is. Oh, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, heck yeah. okay. not about Wolverine. Valerie wrote, Annie, you've had problems cooking rice. I recommend trying the pasta method for cooking rice. Instead of one part rice and two parts water, you put one part rice and about six times that much water in a pot, cook it for the normal amount of time, then drain it in a fine mesh strainer. The rice much more reliably comes out great. Consumer Reports says that a lot of rice is high in arsenic, and that people like me, who are gluten-free, tend to eat enough rice that the arsenic raises our risk of cancer. So they recommend rinsing rice in a fine mesh strainer before cooking it, and then cooking it with the pasta method. Both of these things help to reduce the amount of arsenic in the cooked rice. Good to know.
That is good to know.
It is. Oh, I'd never... Weirdly, I had just never thought about cooking rice like pasta.
I hadn't either. And then I was kind of flummoxed that I hadn't.
Right.
But I've always been so concerned. Rice always felt like you had to get it exactly right with the water. Who knows what will happen? So this is very good to know. Again, thanks to everybody who's giving me all these rice tips, because I have a lot of rice right now because I have a lot of nori right now, as I said.
Oh, so, right.
Sort of a cycle that I'm in. I'm going to try the Instapot. I'm going to try this method, and then I'll compare. But also, Valerie wrote in about induction. And because my problem would be I don't have an induction stovetop. So I think boiling the 6 times amount of water might take a minute. But I'll figure it out. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. I mean, right. Yeah. I think you've got this. I have complete faith in you to boil water, Annie.
That's very kind. It's a leap, Lauren, a leap of faith, but I appreciate it. I'm going to need
Anytime.
It. I'm going to need it in coming days. Well, thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SaverPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Saver is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.
This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.